My boyfriend Ben and I just celebrated our 4-year anniversary. When we were out for dinner last Friday, I leaned over the table and said, "It doesn't really feel like 4 years, does it?" Out of those 4 years, 2 of them were long distance, and those are 2 years that I tend to block out. But when I was making this episode, I remembered that I had randomly recorded a series of Skype conversations between us during this time.
You know, I'm practicing my hiking skills so that we can hike together. I'm doing this for you.
What do you mean you're doing it for me?
I'm not doing this for you. I'm doing this for us. And no reaction.
Even though I'm laughing, long distance was never ideal. There were lots of awkward silences, gestures that Skype could never translate, uncertain see you laters, parties where I had to show up alone, and moments when I was telling people that I had a boyfriend, but I really didn't feel like I did. While this time gave us space to grow, we always wanted it to end. The question was, when would it? You're listening to Millennial, a podcast about maneuvering your 20s captured in real time. Today, we're bringing you a special Valentine's Day episode. It's about a long-distance relationship between two people who lived 4,500 miles apart. Flying from Berlin to Kentucky over the course of 10 years, they also had to decide, when would this end? The end of this real-life romantic comedy will give you goosebumps and make you do a double take. Into the closet. Gonna make a podcast. All right, so we're gonna do this. We're gonna talk to Katie about her long distance relationship for 10 years. That's a long time, long time. Hey!
No, it's fine. I'm completely an open book right now. Like, I haven't even thought about this at all. I don't know what you want from me. I hate my voice, and I don't have a radio voice like you do, Megan Tan.
This is Katie. I know Katie because she and I went to school together. But during that time, I had no idea that she was in a long-term, long-distance relationship. When Katie was 16, she grew up in the conservative South. And she was really feeling the growing pains of being a teenager who swam a different stroke. And then there was Andrea.
All right. See if we get this story straight.
A 17-year-old girl who lived on the other side of the world, who was also surrounded by a conservative culture. Her town was dominantly Catholic. And so when she started becoming attracted to women, she told herself it was probably best that she didn't tell her mom. As teenagers, they were both looking to fill this void. They wanted to find someone who would know them for who they were and like them for the people they wanted to become. So what did they do to find these people? They went online and logged on to an Ellen DeGeneres forum.
You know, just like little teenagers chatting online. It's like, oh my gosh, I love what you had to say. What's your AOL Instant Messenger name? Yeah, about a few months into us talking about our common interest, we started talking about ourselves and, like, and each other.
To me, from the very beginning, it was clear that this was more than just a friendship.
This is Andrea.
And I think it only took a few months before one of us actually said, I love you.
And then we were dating, as odd as that was.
When you guys were like, we're going to start dating. Physically, nothing changes. But I mean, did something change in you?
I remember going to high school and all my friends saying, well, what's different in you? And what is it? Like, what are you smiling about? Why are you happy? And I would say, like, I met this girl and she's really awesome. They're like, oh, that's so cool. Like, where does she go to school? I'm like, well, actually, she lives in Germany.
After a year talking online, Katie and Andrea finally decided that they were going to meet in person. Can you describe that moment? What happened?
2 days after I graduated from high school, I flew out of the country for the first time to meet with Andrea, the stranger on the other side of the internet. And I had seen pictures, I had seen videos, I had heard her voice hundreds of times, but sitting on the plane was still so nerve-wracking. Was she going to like me? Was I going to be cute enough? Was I going to ruin her illusion? Have I created too much of a grand illusion of myself? It's the most intense first date of your life. And got off the plane, cotton mouth. I was like, am I going to kiss her? I don't know. We had always talked about it. Like, so I'm like putting on chapstick and what am I going to do? So I'm walking out of the airport just like shaking. And I'm waiting for my bags. I'm like, oh God, is she here? And I walk out, foreign place, and there's just like the sea of people who stand there and wait for everyone to come out. Oh my God, I don't see her. Where is she? And then, like Moses, this beautiful creature just like parts the Red Sea of all these foreigners.
And she just parted the crowd for me in a way, and I saw her and my heart stopped, and that's when I stopped worrying. I was like, this is it.
It's like no one else is there. It really sounds like a cheesy scene out of a novel or a movie. It really does, but I swear it could not have gone any more perfect. She parts these people and comes through and starts like delicately trotting in heels up to me and just doesn't care that we're standing in front of like 100 people waiting on other people to arrive, and just like gives me the biggest hug ever and kisses me right there. And
it's just, I remember hugging her really, really tight and then thinking, wow, you're real. Like, I didn't just make you up.
But even though the two of them were each other's online confidant and they knew things about each other that they had never told their families, those two worlds were going to collide. When Katie flew to Germany, Andrea's family had no idea that they had been romantically involved for the past year.
So, well, when Katie came to visit, how did you introduce her to your family?
Just as a friend who had met online. I know that sounds really... I'm surprised they let her come here, actually. And actually, the first person who found out was my mother, and that was by pure accident because she saw us kissing in a grocery store. And then that was a whole thing coming out to my family, which wasn't easy at first. Mainly my mom was... She couldn't really understand... Like, she got all the cliches out of the box. Like, but you're pretty, you can date men, you know, like, oh, you've never been with men. How do you know that that's not what you like? And like, and of course, Katie was very supportive as my girlfriend, and like, would always listen, would tell me about her own experiences. But then even when we weren't directly talking, I knew that she was the fight worth fighting. Like, it wasn't even so much, Mom, I'm gay. It was like, no, Mom, I love Katie. And it doesn't even matter what my sexuality is because she's the only one who matters. And she just so happens to be a girl, you know.
When Katie returned back to Kentucky, she did what a lot of 18-year-olds do. Said goodbye to her high school life and then went to college. But in college, everything could change. All of a sudden, Katie wasn't living at home anymore. She was going to parties and was probably being encouraged to drink and experiment and hook up with people. It was clear that the odds of Katie staying with her girlfriend who she met online in high school were slim.
So when you guys were going into college, what was that like?
But yeah, I took her to college with me in a sense. I hung pictures in my dorm room. I put us in frames on next to my twin size dorm bed with my roommate. My roommate would say, hey, what's your life like? And be like, hey, yeah, I have a girlfriend.
So while everyone else around her was partying, hanging out, meeting new friends and dating new people, Katie was in her room talking to the person who she loved but couldn't be with. And because of that, she was missing out on developing her life where she was. And she felt it.
Did you ever feel like you couldn't totally be in the present?
Yeah, absolutely. Because that, I think, was most reflected for me in my career. I was a photojournalism student, and that program, as you know, is very intense, and you have to pretty much give up everything around you, relationship-wise, work-wise, to really dedicate yourself if you want to make something of it. You have to do internships every summer and take as many opportunities as you can get. And while I was watching all of my friends around me work every summer in the photojournalism field, I was traveling abroad. I was going to see my girlfriend. And I think in a way that set me back on that track, but I was deciding at that point in my life what was more important to me. This relationship that I have had for a few years at that time, or pursuing a career. Was it worth not seeing her for a full year or two? And to me, the answer was always, it's not worth not seeing her.
I wonder if you and Andrea also had like a moment where you were just like, I can't, we can't do this, you know?
I've never had that moment. I'm not going to lie, with this territory of a long-distance relationship comes a lot of insecurity. I mean, we've had incidences where, you know, it's like, oh, you're going out that night, who are you going out with, or what are you doing? You know, that kind of petty, jealous bullshit that most relationships go through. But ours is just on a level times 10, because when your partner is on the other side of the world in a different time zone, you can't just sit in the same room and not talk to each other and be mad. You don't have that physicality to apologize to each other with. You have to talk to apologize. That's the only thing we had.
I've never considered not being together because it would be easier, because I knew that no matter what, not being together would always still be worse, because then I wouldn't even have the option of talking to her about the life that we can't currently have together. But at least I had that. I could talk to her about it and we could dream up the future. And that was, I think we were both living in a dreamland, but at least we were living in it together.
The dreamland included both of them living together in the same city. But when 4 years did pass and Katie finally graduated from college, it didn't happen. Instead, she found herself in Kentucky, living at home with her parents in the same house that she was in when she met Andrea online for the first time. She didn't have a stable career in her major and was obligated to pay off thousands of dollars in student loans.
Every year at the beginning of the year, I write down my goals. I say, these are my 2014, 15, 16 now goals. The first one on the list was always quit my job. The second one was move in with Andrea. And I could never scratch it off. I worked as many jobs as I feasibly could. I worked retail. I was a freelance photographer, still am. And I also became a Lyft and Uber driver. I was saving literally every penny I could save. I was rolling change I found in my room to take to the bank and say, here's 10 more dollars you can put in my account. If I wasn't making money, it probably wasn't that important to me at the time. This was my goal. That's how important this was.
Katie did this for 3 years. She worked at a retail job she never wanted to pay the bills that she was obligated to pay, and taxied around strangers for some extra money so that she could be with Andrea. And most nights she would come home, tired, and dial up a tone that she was too familiar with. And Andrea would be on the other side.
And she would tell me a lot of the time that I'm the highlight of her day and really the only good thing maybe on some days. It's a big burden because, yes, I can give you a great 2 hours on Skype, but I can't really do much to improve the rest of your day. And that's very hard. because there's this person that you love and you see them struggling, you're completely helpless.
But Katie wasn't helpless. She didn't want another Christmas to pass without being with Andrea. So they talked about it. And then they set a date. By December of 2015, Katie's feet would be next to Andrea's. And they were going to do whatever they needed to do to make that happen.
And I started adding up my cost, how much a flight is, how much it is to ship my belongings, how much visa fees are, just all the little things that come with a move this big. And that added up to be a lot more than I had saved.
What was this number?
Okay, it was like, I need to save like $5,000 more before I say, let's do it. Never hit that goal. I never hit it. I don't really ask for money, but I had to do it. I had a lot of friends who had said to me in the past, I'm rooting for you guys. You guys are so inspiring. I've heard that before. And I said, okay, maybe if people really believe that, they'd be willing to support it.
Katie set up a GoFundMe for her friends and family to donate to her move to Germany. Her goal was to raise $5,500, but she only raised $225.
Didn't really raise much out of that, a little bit. I definitely had some supportive friends, but not as much as I needed to cover my bases.
But then she got a phone call.
That was probably the biggest donation that I received from a friend, was a flight.
I didn't even know you could book flights for other people until I heard of a couple friends doing that.
This is Mike, another friend who went to school with Katie and I.
So I was like, you know what? I don't have a lot of money, but a currency I do have is frequent flyer miles. So, to be honest, it really wasn't. To me, it was like a no-brainer. Like, I didn't really even hesitate to do that. I mean, that's why you have friends, you know, to help each other out.
It was incredible. Someone giving me something so generous like that really, really meant a lot.
It's funny, when I was booking the plane ticket for her, she's like, it has to be before the date. It has to be before the date. And I mean, she didn't explain the significance of that date, but she was, you know, she's like, it has to be before whatever, December something. And I thought that was sort of odd, but I was like, okay, whatever. It's not a big deal. And it turns out that it was a big deal.
When Katie bought her one-way plane ticket and landed on the other side of the world, her dream wasn't to just be physically living in the same city as Andrea.
Our whole relationship we always talked about, are you the one who wants to be asked to be married, or do you want to do the asking? And we both subtly agreed I was going to be the one asking. I have always imagined myself asking, and she had always, you know, lived the dream of being the one asked and being surprised.
6 days after Katie arrived, she and Andrea had tickets to go see Florence and the Machine, one of their favorite bands.
Knowing that we had tickets to this concert, I knew that's the moment I have to ask her. I started contacting whoever I could contact. I was contacting Florence and the Machine management, whatever emails I could find online, the fan club, please forward this email for me. I wrote a handwritten letter to London, to the management, and said, please help this be possible. Please, please, please. No response at all. Nothing. So the time was coming and the day was coming. The night before, I was even thinking, I was like, I have heard nothing. Do I still want to do it just like in the crowd? What am I going to do?
And we were just sitting in the apartment with cardboard. And then Katie said, actually, I'm going to have to ask you to leave for a moment. I was very confused by that, but I really didn't overthink it. Because I was like, oh, well, maybe she just, you know, wants to make something cute and surprise me with it or something funny.
I draw a sign. I do like a handwritten sign that you can hold up in the crowd, like on a piece of cardboard. And I wrote really big, Florence, comma, help me propose to my girlfriend, on one side. And on the other side, I wrote, we've got the heart for love, for we've got the love, since one of her songs is You've Got the Love. So we made friends while we were waiting in the cold, and Andrea went away to use the bathroom. And I showed all the other girls the sign, and I'm like, okay, don't say anything to her, but I have the sign. I got to show it to Florence during the concert. And if we're all together, like, you know this sign's coming out.
Yeah, and then about halfway through the concert, the song You've Got the Love started playing.
I'm just like, oh my God. I got the ring in my back pocket. So I've got the sign. I'm like, I got to do it now. I hold it up and I flip it around and it says, Florence, help me propose to my girlfriend. Propose in really big, bold letters.
Felt like commotion around us and people starting to talk, but I didn't really understand what was happening.
Sometimes it seems. And they're all pointing at the sign and trying to get Florence's attention. Florence walks over and sees the sign in the middle of like the most perfect stanza of the song, halts and goes, will you marry this wonderful lady? Not knowing what to do, and I'm like, I'm proposing, don't forget that you're proposing right now. You're not just on stage with like your dream band, you're proposing. Congratulations! And I get the ring out, get on one knee.
I'm not a very emotional person, but I was crying so much. These guys just got
to stand on stage and to be so in love with someone and to have people cheer for that, just cheering for love, really warmed my heart. What we have waited for so long was gonna happen.
Last Friday, on February 12th, 2016, Katie and Andrea got married in Germany. And on that same day, they celebrated their 10-year anniversary. Editing help for this episode was provided by Alex Acquesto, Sarah Curtis, and Ben Severance. Also, special thanks to Ashley Norman and Mike Ipp. And of course, to our newlyweds, Andrea Springer-Feritzin and Katie Simpson. If you want to see a video of Katie proposing to Andrea at the Florence and the Machine concert and their most recent wedding photos, go to millennialpodcast.org. If you want to follow us, you can find us on Twitter at millennial, MillennialPDCST, like podcasts without the vowels. You can also send the show a shout out by rating us on iTunes. And if you have any story pitches, our ears are wide open. Just send us an email at stories@millennialpodcast.org. I'm Megan Tan, and thanks for listening.